The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB. The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
And now, Sports Talk 1240.
Good evening, folks. Welcome in Sunday, March 8th, 2015. 2 hours of Sports Talk here on your new and improved Sports Talk 1240. And listen, we're going to have a great show for you tonight. I'm Derek Wozniak. Across the way from me, my partner, John Sweeney. 631-888-8811 is the number to call. In the first hour here, we got a two-hour show for you. First hour, we're going to have a special guest going back to the early 90s. Once again, with the New York Rangers and that Roger Neilson. We're going to welcome in a young stud goal scorer at the time. Former Ranger number 8, Darren Turcotte, will join us in a short while. But right now, it's March, and the Islanders are having one of their best regular seasons and continuing to add to records. And the Rangers are putting together one of their better regular seasons. Hot on the Islanders' tail, first and second collectively. So we should start with the team sitting in first place. So, John, why don't you take a couple minutes and tell us what the Islanders are doing right now.
Here we go. And there's nothing better than me sitting across from my partner, Derek Wozniak, wearing his Ranger garb. And I, with special occasion, my Johnny Tavares jersey, number 1 in points with 73 points last night. Even though they lost, they still got a point out of it. And guess what, folks? First place. It's March 8th, 2015. First place. And then, you know what? The Rangers can't catch them, even if they win tonight, but they're going to lose. Here we go. Here's my yes, yes, yes starting. Jack Capuano against the Predators won his 200th win. Very, very, very good. He's doing a great job.
Second
I'm very happy.
All-time in Islander history, yes.
He's fantastic. Over Nashville.
Coach of the year, maybe.
Johnny T, I love you. 70 points. Going along.
Leading the league in scoring.
That's right. Leading the league in scoring. Right. Do you know Kyle Okposo hasn't played since the All-Star break?
And he's still the second scorer.
And he's second in the team with 44 points.
I understand.
And you got to give a big yes, yes, yes to Halak with the 34 wins. There you go. I love it. Johnny Tavares.
He broke your boy's record, right, Billy Smith?
That's right. He broke Smith's record. Nicky Leddy, career high in goals. This team is just gelling. I can't wait. We're in a perfect position. First in the division in the Metropolitan. Second in the whole Eastern Conference. I love it. I love it, love it, love it. 15 games left to go. Woo! Here we go. But Pittsburgh and the Rangers and also the Capitals, a four-horse race right here, are right up there. So, I mean, I have to give some acknowledgments to Ryan Strome, a young kid, and Lee, the rookie. Possibly, he's not going to be a rookie of the year, but he's going to definitely.
He's got 21 goals or something like
22
that?
22 goals.
Yeah.
Having a great year.
Don't forget Brock Nelson, right? Another first round pick that's up there
and
scoring.
There you go. You got all, you know, all the Oposo, all these guys finally, I mean, are coming through. Strome, Lee, Tavares.
You got a lot of milestones there.
We sure do. We sure do.
But there's a train coming, Johnny. Can we raise that volume up just a little bit there? Can you hear
the train's going to stop Tuesday night, my friend.
Your team got off to a hot start. They played a few more games, which still has them in first place. But since December 8th, Johnny, the hottest team in the NHL, the New York Rangers, only 7 regulation losses in 3 months. And the King, their Hall of Fame goalie, Henrik Lundqvist, has been out for 15 games. And the Rangers have prevailed at a 10-2-3 clip. Man, can you sense it coming? Because the Rangers have only lost one game in regulation in the last month.
And who was that to?
And that was to Philadelphia at the end of February.
That's right.
How about that? They get points, and they're winning games on home ice. And they're getting contributions, because right now the Rangers are rolling 3 strong lines and a solid fourth line. And Rick Nash might lead the team in scoring. He's sitting at 38 goals. He's trailing Ovechkin by a bit. But Broussard's picking it up with the playmaking abilities. St. Louis got back on the scoreboard recently. He's been putting up some goals and assists. Stepan, and more importantly, like I told you last show, even though you were homesick, Zuccarello, Kreider, Hagelin, all putting up points. Kreider climbing towards the 20-goal mark. Him and St. Louis should get there shortly. And on that third line, Kevin Hayes, the rookie, Purple Hayes, picking up the pace and playing solid minutes along with Carl Hagelin and JT Miller.
Have you ever seen a team like the schedule makers cater to these guys? They haven't played, it seems like they haven't played like a week and a half.
I know.
The Islanders have played four tough games on the road
right now.
They're going to fly to Toronto for a tomorrow night game. Then they got to come rushing back to play you, who now you're going to be coming back.
The way it goes.
It's not fair.
And then we got to play Washington the day after we play you.
It'll be a big deal.
Hey, listen, the Rangers have their toughest stretch right now. They lost in Philadelphia. They beat Nashville at home. They got a point from Detroit in an overtime loss the other night. Now they have Chicago tonight. They're scoreless so far. They got the Islanders and the Capitals coming up after that.
Listen,
5 weeks to go in the NHL season. And to catch up in games played, your team will probably play three games a week, basically. The Rangers, four of those 5 weeks, they'll have to play four games because they have four games in hand. So they will play 82 games, and we will see who finishes in first.
We'll see.
But your team's basically been there all season.
Hey, listen.
And right now, since Mr. Nash... All right. Since Mr. Nash...
Yes.
You're a little disruptive trying to get a phone number. So we can get a hold of our guests.
Mr. Nash is whatever. He's all those goals.
Listen,
I heard
the Calgary game, and they won one. They talked to Nash,
like,
and he said,
year.
Listen, we just got to keep this train rolling.
That's what your motto is.
The song now is from Aerosmith, Train Kept It Rolling.
All I know is it's very exciting.
This team is playing really well. And listen, let's not dismiss the fact that at the trade deadline, the Rangers... Now, hopefully, in their estimation, have added the final piece to their puzzle, because what they're doing is an indication that they're going for it right now. You know, big move last March when they moved Ryan Callahan, their captain, to Tampa Bay, and a couple of first-round picks, and got Marty St. Louis. And we all know the rallying point for the Rangers in the playoff season surrounding Marty and his family, and how we got this team to bond together and push forward.
We are the family. That's
and then went to the Stanley Cup.
I agree.
And now this year... At the trade deadline, they trade away another first-round pick, a couple of prospects, and they pick up Keith Yandel.
Which is
so
a
now
great
you're
trade.
Putting Keith
great
Yandel
trade.
On a defensive core.
It's like a fourth scorer.
With Dan Girardi
it's like having
and Ryan
four scorers
McDonough.
On the line, on the team, right.
You got Kevin Klein and Mark Stahl, and you got Dan Boyle and Keith Yandel. If he works out to be the playmaker and point getter on the power play that he is, Keith Yandel could make this one of the top defensive units in the NHL, and come playoff time, that will be ultra important. And the most important thing is, even though they gave up another first-round pick, even though they traded a couple of young guys, they didn't disrupt the core players that make up this team, what they're building towards this championship-type team. So hopefully, this will be another big march for the Rangers. They've been real good the last 3 months, and then rolling into the playoffs. Hopefully, this addition of Yandel and that helpful return of Lundqvist, he gets back to playing the Hall of Fame type goalie. He's accustomed to
that injury.
This could be a big time run for the Rangers in the playoffs. Hopefully,
that injury that Lundqvist had is pretty bad. Like you said, if he gets hit in the neck with that blood vessel in his neck, he could have a stroke. It's a serious injury. It's not like something to play around with. But I just want to make another point, which I didn't finish up.
Right.
It's been 30 years since the Islanders have scored 100 points in a season or more. Thank you. And the 43 wins, which they should get tomorrow night.
You can lower down the music for now, Brian. You can lower down the music for now.
The 43 wins that they will get tomorrow night will be the first time in 30 years.
Yeah, listen.
40 years that they've won 43.
They got 42 wins. The next win will make Jack Capuano the first coach since Al Alba.
The great
Al
Alba.
To win 43 or more games. Al Alba's the only guy to do it.
Right, exactly.
How about that? How about that?
I'm excited. Hey, look, at the beginning of the year, I said the Islanders are going to have 94 points. I was drinking the Kool-Aid. I said they're definitely making the playoffs. Hey, look at now.
Which they are. They're going.
Look at this. We're right here.
They haven't shown any signs of
slowing down.
Which is very
they haven't lost more. They haven't lost three games or more the whole season. That's the longest.
Well, I think they had three losing streaks of three games. That's pretty good, though.
That's great. They're playing
great. They're a young team, so I really can't knock anything they've done.
This is why I'm wearing my Johnny
Tavares. How's their penalty kill? Is their penalty killing
the PK? The PK's getting a little better. It's been getting a little better. They're working on it. It's getting better. It is getting better. Hey, you know what? We'll see what happens.
Hey, listen, I'm impressed with Halak. He broke Billy Smith's record for most wins in a single season.
Yeah.
That's impressive. John Tavares leading the league in points, 70 points. He's going to be up there for the Hart Trophy consideration, along with guys like Ovechkin, maybe Evgeny Malkin. Probably Carey Price is the leader right now because he's
for the Vezina.
carrying the Canadians on his back. Well, not only the Vezina, but Carey Price might be up for the Hart Trophy because his goals against is below two. He's got numbers
night.
That far exceed anybody.
Yeah.
So he might be in the running for that also. But I'm impressed with, like I said, the next win makes Capuano the only other coach next to Arbor to win 43 or more games. So Jack Capuano, in my estimation, and I know there's other teams that have had good years like Nashville.
Possibly
like
rookie
Montreal,
of the year.
But I would say that Capuano's got to be coach of the year. Nobody could have expected the Islanders to be battling for first place and to be sitting in first place as long as they have. Nobody.
Well, it's March 8th and they're still there.
You know, and I'm not a big Garth Snow guy, but at least, you know, he's redeeming himself. You know, the big additions to start the season with Letty and Boychuk, the way this team has pressed forward, he didn't move any young stars.
Well,
at the trade deadline?
He said he wasn't going to do that, right?
That's impressive.
Hey, look, last year he gave it a shot with Vanek, and he didn't, you know, he made a move. Vanek didn't work out. Hey, at least you got to say one thing. At least he's trying. Snow's making the right moves, and putting the team in the right direction, keeping the youth, which you want to do.
Yeah, he's done.
He's
done
many years to go on.
He's done some things that you don't agree with, but
well, the Clutterbuck
outside of getting rid of Nino Niederreiter for whatever reasons there were behind the scenes.
Yeah.
He's got four of his first-round picks sitting on top of his team scoring list, right? So you got Tavares and Okposo there.
Right.
And Strom's up there.
Yeah.
And Brock Nelson. Those are all first-round picks. That's a positive sign. That's drafting, working out for the better, and this team, you know, making it be a strong point. They're putting up points.
Yeah.
And then you get, and obviously, listen, they've got over 200 goal scores. So guys.
They're second in the league in goals.
On the first three lines, even the fourth line scoring goals. How many goals does Matt Martin have? Eight goals?
Eight goals.
That's impressive. He's no goal scorer at all.
That's because Boomer Esiason worked with him on the offseason.
Why would you point out something so stupid?
It's funny. Like, that's why I said
it.
You really want to annoy me tonight?
Is that what your problem is?
Well, look, I love annoying you because you're wearing that Ranger emblem, and I got to look at it just for the next 2 hours. That's why.
Well, you got your Islander jersey
on
there.
You're looking pretty sharp
with your hat, your Steve Webb autographed hat there.
Right. Steve Webb,
you got your Johnny T jersey on.
Captain.
Are we able to hook up this interview yet? Not yet? Try calling it straight through. See if we can do it without the card. Can't do it, right? What a studio we work at, Johnny boy.
Yeah.
You know, it would have been easy if we had Mike Bossy, but we know he's not necessarily the greatest of guys, so we couldn't get him, right?
Yeah, we couldn't get him. That's
you
okay.
Care to tell people the story behind that?
Well, Bossy's not a, I guess he was in a mood one day.
Not a very personable type guy, right?
Not a lot of people engaging. Like that. Maybe he was, who knows, maybe he was a long
not
flight.
Not as engaging as you would have hoped?
From Montreal. No, he wasn't as engaging to me as I thought it was. When I asked him a question about a game, and I thought he would know the answer to it. He just told me to basically get a life.
Get a life, right?
Yeah. He says, I can't remember what
a game
I did
that was televised that day.
Yeah.
Right?
On ESPN. I mean, on
MSG Network. It was a Ranger throwback game, you know, like back in the vault. And it was a game against the Islanders.
Islanders
where the Rangers led
7-2,
and the Islanders came storming back.
And then they scored a goal with 18 seconds to tie it, and they disallowed it.
They blew the whistle.
And he was jumping up and down, going crazy. I thought he'd remember it.
And you went to an Islander gathering and just asked him a simple question about it.
Yes, and he said basically to me.
You should have told him, well, I'm surprised you don't remember it since you were jumping up and down screaming like a little girl that had a doll taken away from her.
Yeah.
So let me just point out, we pulled no punches here.
He was a childhood.
Bad job by Bossy dealing with a former military vet and a former police officer. And there's no excuse for not embracing fans that come out to celebrate your great career. So if you're listening, Mike Bossy, which I'm sure you're not.
Boo-hoo to you.
You're not going to be a guest on the show ever. And we don't care.
I tried a few times.
I know you did. We got him coming in. He's hooked up. All right, so now we filled that spare time trying to get our guests hooked up. Listen, folks, we're going to get back to Ranger and Allen to talk in the present. A little later on. But right now, we're going to go back and listen. Last month we had Troy Millett on, so we talked about those Roger Nielsen years. We're going to go back and we're going to talk about one of the better homegrown goal scorers the Rangers ever produced. And there haven't been too many. The best of them probably Steve Vickers, averaged 30 or more goals his first 4 years in the league. Don Maloney was pretty good when he came up with the Rangers. Mark Pavlich was excellent. And Thomas Sandstrom, another one of my favorites. Another guy, 25 goals or more his first 4 or 5 years in the league with the Rangers. And this guy, also won number 8 like Steve Vickers, came in, 89-90 season was his first full season as a rookie. 4 straight years, 25 or more goals. Darren Turcotte, number 8. Turk, how are you tonight? Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
How you doing,
Darren? I'm doing well.
It's a pleasure being out on the fans. It's a pleasure to talk to you. You were one of the greats for the Rangers, and I appreciate everything you did. But Derek is the Ranger fan. He is. How you doing tonight? How's everything?
I'm doing pretty good. Yeah, felt like I was waiting around that at the trade deadline there for the call that hopefully wasn't going to come. But
well, we apologize for that. We apologize.
No problem.
That's correct. We have a real big time studio here, Darren. So we just bear with us. We got you hooked up, and you're in now. And first and foremost, people want to know, what are you up to these days? You've been retired for a while now. You're the same age as me and my partner. So you got a son playing junior hockey. What's going on in your life right now?
Right now, I'm up in my hometown coaching the university women's hockey team up here, and our season unfortunately just finished last weekend in the semifinals. But I've been with the women's program at the university for 3 years now, and enjoying my time.
All right, and you got a son playing junior hockey also?
He's done now. He finished junior hockey a couple years ago. He played half a season out in North Dakota, and then just came home and decided to finish his schooling at home here.
All right. So we like to profile our former Rangers, and before we get to your time with the Blue Shirts, let's go back. Now, this part you have to clear up for me. You were born in Boston, Massachusetts back in 68, but did you spend many years there, or did you move to Canada? What's the story behind your upbringing?
My dad was playing his senior year at Northeastern University, so we moved back to Ontario right after his senior year. I grew up in North Bay, Ontario, and played all of my minor hockey and my junior hockey right in my hometown. And really, from my last year of junior, I went to Colorado in the minors, and the following year I started with the Rangers.
Right, so when you were growing up in Canada, your father being a hockey player, was that the instant, like, you know, brought you into and made you want to play hockey?
I don't know if that's what made me want to play hockey. I just, you know what, I played for fun, and everybody in Canada, they're, you know, that plays hockey, dreams of playing in the NHL someday, but that wasn't really something that, that's not the reason I played. I just played because I enjoyed playing it. And, being from Canada, you know, once the snow flies in mid-November, you can be on an outdoor rink all day. And that's what, you know, I wasn't into trucks and toy trucks and things. I just wanted to have a stick in my hand and shoot pucks or be on the outdoor rink all day.
Right, and growing up with your dad and the family, who's your favorite team? You have a favorite team you guys rooted for?
I believe my dad was a Red Wings fan because of Gordie Howe.
Okay, that's good.
And I guess if I was to pick one team, I'd probably say that growing up, I probably liked the Oilers just because, they were a high-flying offensive team, and that's the way I like to play. So they had a pretty good player. I think he finished in New York to Gretzky. So, they just had a team that was, you know, at the time just, you know, could throw up 6, 7, 8, 9 goals in a game, and That was exciting for me to watch.
Was there any players that you idolized when you were a kid? Like, you know, like all kids do that. I mean, was there a special player? Was it Gretzky?
Obviously, when I was growing up, Wayne was in his prime and with the Oilers, and it was like he was always chasing some type of a record. And And, you know, it's no different in baseball when, you know, the Maguires or the Sosas or, you know, when they're chasing a league record, everybody, it just adds to the hype. And it seemed like he was always chasing something, like consecutive point streaks or right. how fast he could get to 50 goals. So it was always exciting, you know, with Wayne and the Oilers for sure.
Yeah, they certainly were the one team, you know, usually in any main sport, but football, hockey, it doesn't matter. You know, defense will win championships, but the Oilers were one team that really defined where your best defense was your offense. I mean, they scored at an ungodly rate. And it was very exciting to watch, like you said.
Yeah.
As a youngster, were you a multi-sport athlete, or was hockey your focus as you were growing up through your teenage years?
I was definitely a multi-sport athlete. And, you know, that's the biggest change I see in youngsters and in young kids and in parents. It's like it's so sports specific now, and I'm not necessarily, I know that that's probably not going to make the best athlete in the world, but you know, it's hard to contradict or, you know, to tell people what you think when everybody else is playing hockey 24/7, 12 months a year. But, you know, even in high school, I played volleyball. I played football, growing up in the summers. I played baseball all the time. And, you know, there was really no such thing as summer hockey. It was, you know, once your hockey season was over, you turn to something else for the summer.
Right.
And, but now, you know, the rinks are open 12 months a year, and there's summer teams and spring teams and fall teams and skill sessions. And there's, you know, you can be on the ice 12 months a year.
Right. So,
you know, I know that, you know, USA Hockey is making a big push, in their long-term athlete, development plan to, you know, to try and get kids to play other sports. And quite honestly, I think that's something that's been lost in the last, that's been lost in the last probably, you know, 10 to 15 years, but something that is definitely going to continue to develop better athletes.
Right. So you mentioned that you played baseball. Now, when you were growing up, did you pull for the Montreal Expos or the Toronto Blue Jays at all?
The Blue Jays, I'm not exactly, they started around my teenage years.
Yep.
And, you know, obviously there was a pretty big hype, with the Blue Jays and the Sky Dome. And at the time, the Sky Dome was a building that, you know, was a venue that was one of the most intriguing buildings in the world, where you could, you know, you had this big roof that just, well, if it was going to start raining, they just closed the roof, and it was
right.
You know, it was really something to
it was really something
to see at the time. And you know, now there's, you know,
the retractable.
You know, I wouldn't consider it the best building in the league right now, but at the time it had to be pretty close.
Right. Okay, so when you entered your teenage years, okay, you're 16 years old. You go into major junior hockey. You play for North Bay Centennials. Tell
yeah.
us what that was like, because you were pretty, you know, consistent goal scorer in that league. So tell us what it was like going in and maybe some of the guys you played with.
Going in, I was coming out of I was going in as an underage player because I was drafted as an underage. And I was small. I was probably, if I jumped out of the shower with my clothes on, I was probably about 145.
Right.
And the league was pretty tough back then. So I spent probably spent all 4 years trying to figure out ways to get away from people that were chasing me. But I definitely probably learned how to skate a little bit faster.
Well, I'll tell you. Go ahead.
But, you know, overall, you know, I was coming out of a good midget program that won the national championship. and I had three other players from that team that were starting their first year of junior here in North Bay, and you know, having the opportunity to play in my hometown was great, and was something that definitely made it a lot easier to transition as a 16-year-old.
Yeah, because you were drafted by the Rangers at age 17, 18. You had 30 or more goals every year in juniors. Last year, I saw that you averaged almost 2 points per game. So you're performing at a real strong level all the way through, all 4 years, no drop-offs. I know you played with Jeff Blomberg, from having looked it up. What was the experience playing with him, knowing that you wound up on the Rangers with him also in the early 90s?
Yeah, I played with Jeff here in North Bay, and I believe he was actually drafted the same year I was.
Okay.
Probably a little bit higher. And, you know, going into my draft year, I was probably ranked in the second or third round. And, you know, the bottom line is I was small. I was 155 pounds when I was drafted, 160 pounds if I ate a lot of bananas before the official weigh-in. But
right,
you know, it was that was different than it is now, because they're, you know, the speed of the game. You know, you're not necessarily looking for, you know, all the bigger players, the kids that are 6'1", 6'2", 6'3", you know, speed is where the game is at right now. And, you know, if you're smaller but you can really skate and you have great skills, you can play. But it wasn't necessarily like that at the time. And, you know, my first training camp in New York, you walk in there and, you know, you got Barry Beck, George McPhee, you know, Rudy Poshek was flying around there, and you know, Gresh, and it was intimidating. It was intimidating for me, and you know, I know my first camp that I went to, I had been at U.S. National. I think it was the under-18 camp in the summer, and I had pulled my hip flexor, and Dave Smith, who was the trainer in New York, was actually. No, it was actually his assistant was the trainer that was in Lake Placid. And when I got to New York, I didn't pass my physical. And I found out I didn't pass my physical the second year, and I was completely healthy. But the bottom line is they were trying to find ways to keep me on the ice so I could get bigger over the course of the next 12 months. And... you know, it was then my first camp that I participated in as a 19-year-old in New York. I separated my shoulder and had to sit out the first half of the year in junior. And then that year, I was able to put up 60 points in the second half of the year. And really, from there, I went to Colorado following my junior year. Had a good 10 or 12 games of regular season, a good playoff push. And then the next year I started in New York, and it was a little bit up and down. And I remember I started in New York. I got sent down to Colorado and played that night, and I had 7 points in my first game, and I was on the plane the next morning back to New York.
Heading back.
Well, there you go.
Darren, I want to ask you a question. Corey Hirsch, we talked to him a couple of weeks ago, and he said that when he was growing up, when he got drafted by the Rangers, he was an Islander fan growing up as a kid, he said. But when he got drafted by the Rangers, he said it was like the greatest thing. It was like being a New York Yankee. He said it was like the most exciting thing, and I was wondering if that basically was the same thing when you found out that you were a Ranger and you actually went the first time you went to the Garden and everything. Had you had that? Did you have the same feeling inside about the
Rangers? I think it took a little bit. Like, obviously, when you hear your name called at the draft, it's something, you know, that is something that you've always, you know, you've dreamed of that you thought might never happen. But again, going into the draft, I was probably in the second or third round, and at the time, the draft used to go six rounds on day one and six rounds on day two. And I was pretty close to the end of the sixth round, and I'm pretty sure that I probably wasn't coming back to the draft on the second day, because, you know, once you get to the second round, every team that selects, you're like, it could be me. And, you know, you've got 21 or 24 teams at the time, times three rounds, you got to sit there for, you know, 60 names being called, and your name's not coming up, and, you know, when it finally did, it was obviously a huge relief, and I was really excited to be a New York Ranger.
Yeah, and it's such a young age. Darren, if you can stick with us, we just got to take a quick break, and then we'll get into your years with Roger Nielsen and the New York Rangers, okay?
All right, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Sports Radio New York and AM 1240 WGBB are proud to announce the new Sports Talk 1240, along with the launch of a brand new website at sportstalk1240.com. Check out our new site for information about upcoming shows, as well as easy access to past shows, articles, our live studio webcam, and more. Of course, be sure to tune in to Sports Talk 1240 every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. on AM 1240 WGBB, or visit sportstalk1240.com for ways to listen to the live broadcast online or from your iPhone. We're excited about these new changes and hope you will be too.
So you're looking for a great club but don't want to go into Manhattan, or you'd like to find a new restaurant to check out, or you're buying a house here on Long Island and you'd like to find out about a certain area. Wouldn't it be nice if you could find out all the information in just one spot? Well, you can. LongIslandExchange.com. It's all you need to find out all about Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com for hotspots, classifieds, news, and more. LongIslandExchange.com is designed with only the Long Islander in mind. Get the best of Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com. Discover Long Island all over again at LongIslandExchange.com.
If you're trying to quit smoking, dipping, or chewing tobacco, you don't have to do it alone. Nicotine Anonymous is a 12-step program of recovery that meets regularly in your area. There are no dues or fees. The only requirement for membership is a desire to be free of nicotine. For information and meetings near you, call 877-TRY-NIC-A. That's 877-TRY-NICA, or visit nicotine-anonymous.org. Let us share our experience, strength, and hope with you.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240. Check us out every Sunday night at 8 p.m. right here on AM 1240 WGBB. And visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Making simple changes in your everyday travel choices makes a big difference to New York's air quality. Trip change, use mass transit, rideshare, bike, or walk. Visit cleanairny.org to learn more. Clean Air New York, breathe it in. A public service message brought to you by the New York State Department of Transportation.
And now, back to Sports Talk 1240.
All right, welcome back, folks. And we're here with talking to Darren Turcotte, former Ranger. Darren, you know, your rookie year, you came up at the end of Esposito's reign as GM, and he, you know, fired his coach at the end of the 89 season. You had a few games in there, maybe one playoff game, but your true rookie season, you're up for the Calder, 1989-90 season. Roger Nielsen had just come over, taken over as head coach, and you, as a rookie, third on the team in scoring, 32 goals, 34 assists. So maybe talk to us about, you know, you spoke earlier about how you were small, but I'm sure you found some motivation from guys like Gretzky or Dennis Savard watching them play hockey. So a small guy coming in, I know you're a little fearful in terms of training camp stuff. So what did you do to deal with that and get past that? Because you're a goal scorer out of the gate, something uncommon. I've been watching the Rangers 35, 40 years. So, you know, first impressions. I talked to Troy Millett about this last month. You made a great first impression. So tell us how you got through that training camp and got rolling in your first true rookie season. Go ahead.
Well, again, it was everything happened really quickly coming out of junior, and getting the call to the minors and then going through the camp and splitting that year where I really only played about 40 games, being back and forth between the Rangers and being a healthy scratch. And I got in the 20 games. I had a great, great end of that season. You know, the month of March was really good for me. And then, you know, coming back the next year, you know, you're just fighting. I'm just fighting for a spot. I was just fighting for a spot, and I felt every game I was just fighting for playing time. And I just want I guess it's a little bit of what got me there. It was, you know, just the drive and the determination to do the best I could every time I was on the ice. And really, that's all I tried to do. And once things start going well, and you know, you feed off of the crowd, and you know, I'm a small town guy that was playing in New York City, and I know that, you know, my first hat trick was in probably right around this time or around this week in 89, I guess, and had a hat trick. And you know, I was actually out with Brian Leetch, because I remember, because his birthday's March 1st, mine's March 2nd, so we were out, and we were at a location where, you know, Bruce Willis was there and Demi Moore was there, and you know, I see a guy in a baseball hat, and I'm looking over, and I'm like, I recognize that guy from TV, and it was John McEnroe.
All right.
And, you know, so all of a sudden he walks over to me, and he was like, "You're Darren Turcotte, aren't you?" I'm like, yeah. Like, he's like, great game last night. You know, I congratulations on the hat trick. And to me, that was like surreal, that like I'm watching all these people at, you know, at the location we're at, and I'm thinking, oh my God, that I'm like in the same place with all these. And he came over and congratulated me on my hat trick, and I was like, did he just say that? But it was, you know, I really fed off of that, again, the atmosphere and the crowd, and just tried to play as hard as I could every night, and, you know, hope that the fans would respect that.
Well, like I said, you got out of the gate quick. Now, that 89-90 season, like I said, it was the first year of Roger Nielsen. What were your impressions of this new coach taking over? Did the culture change? Did it seem like it changed overnight from the Espo regime into the Nielsen and Neil Smith era?
Yeah, again, that was everything happened pretty quick when I got there. Espo was the GM, and Joe Bucchino was the assistant GM. Michel Bergeron was the head coach, and you know, all three of those guys are pretty vocal and pretty animated. And we, you know, the next year you walk in and it's Neil Smith, Roger Nielsen, Ron Smith, and it was just like, it was a completely different atmosphere. And, you know, Roger was one coach that, that really, really cared for his players and really tried to treat his players as family. And you know, I'm 20 years old. I'm living away from home for the first time, and you know, it was comforting for me to have a coach like that. And I think, you know, it definitely helped me over the course of my first year.
And the players on your team, looking around the locker room, was there anybody you looked to for guidance during that season?
You know what, it was kind of a transition year.
Right.
You know, Brian Leetch was there, Troy Millett, Jeff Lundberg, myself, Chris King, Paul Broughton. You know, so we had a lot of younger players. Ulf Dahlin was in his second year.
Yeah.
But then we also had the older, you know, the older or the veteran players, you know, James Patrick, Chris Nyland, Mark Hardy, you know, so I really feel that, you know, that team had some young players, a young group and an older group, but in the dressing room, it was really good. You know, right. I sat beside Marcel Dion and, you know, I still remember, you know, Marcel was one of the highest paid players in the league at the time, and guys used to gather around his stall every time the paychecks came out, and just to see how much it was. But, you know, it's definitely, you know, there's probably paychecks now that are equal to his yearly salary, and he was the highest paid player in the league.
Right. Well, now in this era with Nielsen taking over with Roger, this was the beginning of really building that championship team that won in 94. So I'm going to ask you about two guys. One guy was going and one guy was coming. Two of my favorites, though. Towards the end of the season, Thomas Sandstrom and Granato were traded for Bernie Nichols. Thomas Sandstrom, what was it like being around him? Because he was a big-time point producer for the Rangers in his early years, and now all of a sudden he was being traded for, you know, a big name like Bernie Nichols. But how was it being around Thomas Sandstrom?
Well, again, he was a player that, you know, he came to play hard every night, and you know, he was at the time he was the go-to guy in New York at the time, and you know, he was definitely somebody that I tried to model my game around, or tried to, you know, keep pace with, because, you know, I knew that if I could keep pace with what he was doing on the ice, that, you know, I was more than likely to be successful. And,
right.
You know, Jan Eriksson was there at the same time, and there wasn't as many European players, so they were really, I don't want to say separate from everybody else, but, you know, they definitely hung around together more than with other players. So, you know, they were very, you know, especially Jan was very subdued and very much a family man, and just, you know, he did what he had to do at the rink, and
right.
then he'd do what he had to do at home, kind of thing. But the real emerging leader in that year would have been Leachy.
Right, Brian, sure. Leachy, who was early in his career, he was in his second full season. Yeah, no, absolutely. Okay, so now the other guy I want to ask you about, because you were there and you played with him, and if you're aware of what's going on, which I'm sure you are, the Rangers just made a trade recently. Now, March trade deadline and everything, they acquired a big playmaking defenseman from Arizona in Keith Yandle. But arguably the best, or at least one of the best March trades they ever made, involved Dolph Dahlin leaving, but Mike Gartner was probably the best goal scorer I ever saw the Rangers acquire in a trade. What was it like being around a guy who was right around 500 goals when he got here and playing with him?
You know, when we got Gertz, it was really a message to the dressing room that we were ready to try and make a run. And again, we had a young team that had been building, and you know, we really getting a player like that with his speed, and you know, you look at his speed and, you know, but he also scored a ton of goals within 5 feet of the net, either, you know, through deflections or tips or screens or whatever. And, you know, Mike was, you know, a family guy that played hard every night. And that was our team. Like, if you looked at that team in general, we had a lot of hard workers. And
right.
We bought into a system. We played the system extremely well, and you know, we realized what, you know, what our goals were, and you know, how good we could be if we all stuck to the game plan.
Right. Now listen, this year, the Rangers and Islanders are playing as well as I've seen both teams at the same time in the regular season. They've only met twice in the playoffs in the last 25 years, okay? And you played in the first, when you played against them in 1990, that was the first time since 84. And big series, big buildup. The Rangers had finished in first place for the first time since the 1940s. And that's how exciting it was for me going to the Garden. I was in college, and it was like the only year me and my dad had season tickets was your rookie year. So the buildup to that series with the Islanders, what was that like and going through that series victory?
You know what? That series was probably one of the most nerve-wracking things for a 20-year-old or 21-year-old, whatever it was at the time. And, you know, the electricity in both buildings just climbed to a whole different level. And, you know, again, we were in a situation where we were the only team that could, you know, we were the only team that could let their fans down at that point. Right. You know, the Islanders were, you know, going in as underdogs, and even though they had had success in the past and or like more recent past, but we were the team to beat, and it was interesting. You know, I still remember walking across from the hotel to the, you know, Nassau Coliseum where we stayed. You know, the hotel where we stayed during the day.
Right.
I was nervous. I was nervous walking across the parking lot because I was like, just the animosity was, for me, was, you know, I was looking over my shoulders and right. making sure, trying to find some Ranger fans to help me get across the parking lot.
Yeah.
It was definitely interesting.
Well, that was one of the biggest rivalries in sports at the time, you know, building up. The Islander Rangers were always a big rival back here in New York, and it was for sure. Yeah. It was like, you know, like the Yankees in Boston. You know, that's how it is with the Islanders Rangers. I mean, so basically with the Islander Ranger game, was that like one of the best series matchups that you had when in your pro career?
Definitely one of the most exciting. You know, the series that we had against Pittsburgh. You know, my third or fourth year was just an unreal series.
Right.
You know, even the series we had with Washington, I think that might have been I think that was the following year.
You played them back to back years, actually. That year you played them. That was the year of John Druce, if you remember. You guys actually won game one.
That's the year I remember. You know, they had some, you know, they had Ridley and Hunter and Miller and Hatcher and Langway and John Druce. Like, who's John Druce?
Yeah, we all found out the hard way, right?
Yeah, we found out the hard way. You know, I still look back. I still tell people, you know, when I'm coaching and, you know, there's always somebody that steps up and you look, you know, I pull up his stats and I think he had 8 goals during the regular season and 65 or 70 games, and right. he had 11 against us in the playoffs in one round.
Yeah, it was amazing what he did. And you guys won game one, I think it was 7-3. Bernie Nichols had a big game, and I'm like, this is going to be great. You know, because I couldn't go to the game. My dad took my mom, and I'm like, this is going to be great. And 4 games later, you know, the series is over. Overtime, he actually scored the overtime game winner at the Garden in game 5. So, that stung at the time. Now, the next year, the 90-91 season, another solid season, finished in second place. But you yourself, nice honor, you made the All-Star team, right? So talk about that. How was that as a personal experience going out to the All-Star game in Chicago?
A little surreal. Again, I'm 21 years old. I'm going to the All-Star game, and it was, I really didn't know what to expect. You go in, you go to the skills competition. The first thing I noticed when I walked in, I was like, I walk in the dressing room and I've got my All-Star jersey hung up, and I'm looking at, you know, Ray Bourque and all these, you know, and they've got like six jerseys. And I'm like, how does that happen? Well, I found out after that all you have to do is ask for them, and what they wear one for the All-Star competition and one each period, and they all become game worn. So I still just have the one, but you know, it was just the whole thing for me was just you know, I spent the weekend in awe, really. It you know, I was in the fastest skater competition, and I ended up in the finals with at the time it was just one straight length of the rink.
Right.
And you know, I was in the finals. I think Thomas Sandstrom was in the finals, and officially I ended up second, but after the race, you know, Coffey came up, he's like, you got me. And so they went to a replay. Well, the replay was shot from an angle where they couldn't really determine. And
right.
I thought I won. Coffey told me I won, but you know, they went to the replay and Coffey beat me. But you know, I probably had, he was probably going half speed because he'd been there before.
Right. Yeah.
I was skating as fast as I could just because I was scared. Just go. Don't worry about the end boards at the other end. Just go as fast as you can and run into them. It doesn't matter.
Listen,
just don't embarrass yourself.
You're neck and neck with Coffey. He's one of the fastest skaters ever, so that's pretty good right there, right?
Yeah.
All right, so now the next year. Now that year you lost again to Washington in the playoffs. I remember that year, the one overtime goal by Dino Cicerelli wrapped one in, and I just almost lost my mind. But anyway, I got past that. Because the next year, the Rangers went out, and they got Mark Messier, and they acquired, I wasn't happy that Troy Millett was awarded to Edmonton, but they acquired Adam Graves, who winds up being my favorite Ranger of all time. You win the President's Trophy, you come in first place again. So now you see the Stanley Cup contending team building, first place, second place. Now in 91-92, a first place finish again, very consistent season, team played great. You roll into the playoffs, you go seven games, you take out the Devils. All right, Mike Gaughton had some big games, some big goals.
Yeah.
Yourself, you had some goals in that series. What was it like? Now we're going up against the Pittsburgh Penguins, and you know, they had already won a Stanley Cup the previous year, but the Rangers were poised. The culture has changed. You said that you felt the change coming when Nielsen came in. What was that season like going through leading up into the playoffs?
I feel that was a series that really could have gone, either way. And,
right.
You know, the goaltending was fantastic on both ends. And, you know, we're playing a team that had, you know, that had a lot of experience. And, you know, they even though on paper they may have been underdogs,
right.
You know, you look down their roster, they had some really talented players that, that obviously knew how to win.
Yeah, they had 7 of 10 Hall of Famers on that team. They had a lot. You know, Scotty Bowman took over, and they had a lot of Hall of Famers on that team.
Yeah. And, you know, so in the standings, we may have been favored, but, you know, on paper, we may not quite have been there yet. But it was definitely a fantastic series.
Well, let me ask you this question, because watching as a diehard fan, you get tied up in the emotions of it. But as a player, you see, you know, and Graves got a few games as part of a suspension, but Lemieux was injured in that whole slashing incident. Now, Lemieux is done for the series. So as a player, be as honest with me as you can, as a player, Lemieux's done for the series. He's one of the best players of all time. When Chris King scores in overtime of Game 3 and you go up 2-1, did you think you weren't going to win a game the rest of the series at that point? Or did you think, hey, here we go?
We definitely wouldn't have been thinking that we're not going to win another game the
rest
of the series.
It's amazing, right, how it turned.
But I don't think, you know, I don't think we would have been, you know, a confident enough group at the time to say, you know what, we're not going to lose another game in the series, because we knew there was obviously still a lot of work to do. And you know, now you're fighting, you know, not only a good team, but a team that has, you know, some motivation to prove that, you know, we're going to pick up the pieces, and, you know, not one of us is going to replace Mario, but as a group, we can all step up a little bit and you know, hopefully get him back for the following series.
Yeah, I'll tell you, that was a tough one to take as a fan. You guys were so good that year, and you could see everything coming together year after year after year. Now, 93, you know, probably the toughest season for you to go through. But another season you put up 25, 26 goals, but the team finished, wound up, you know, Roger Nielsen got fired. You guys wound up finishing in last place. Now, in the end, the Rangers won the Stanley Cup in 94. But when I look back, you know, they built that team well before 94, going through your prime years with the team, and a few young guys were, you know, a few young homegrown solid players were traded to get to the end. You were traded for a veteran presence. You were part of a trade with Patrick to get, obviously, Steve Larmer. But even the year before, in 93, you know, Doug Weight was traded for Esa Tiikkanen, and then towards the end of that 94 season, Tony Amonte was traded. So, you know, you, Doug Weight, and Tony Amonte, those are three of the young core guys that were coming up,
yeah.
moved for certain pieces. So, you know, it led to something I wanted as a fan, but I certainly didn't want to see Turcotte not get a Stanley Cup ring or Mike Gartner not get a Stanley Cup ring. What was your feeling leaving the Rangers at that point?
Well, before I'm going to go to my story that you wanted me to come up with, one of the strangest things I've ever seen, and I want to go to the Doug Weight trade.
Okay.
I'm sure you've heard it before, but I have never, and I, you know, you may never see this again in pro sports, but Doug Weight and Tiikkanen were traded during warm-up.
During warm-ups, okay, for a game, all right.
They were actually, Doug Weight was a member of the New York Rangers, S. Tiikkanen was a member of the Oilers in warm-up, and we came off the ice after warm-up, and Doug Weight's, all his clothes and his extra equipment and everything was in a shopping cart.
Wow.
And they basically pulled him, and they wheeled this shopping cart down the hall, and in came Tiikkanen.
Walks right over to your locker room. Oh, unbelievable.
And they just changed locker rooms, and they played that night.
Wow.
And their jerseys had their name stitched on them,
right,
because they were done right down at Cosby's, and they played that night for a different team that they warmed up with.
That is unbelievable.
It's just, you know, but, you know, that's got to be one of the strangest things that I've ever, like.
No, without question. Usually the guy's in his hotel room, he gets a call or he sees it on, you know, TV,
right,
or he's on the radio.
It's bad enough getting a call, but it's, you know, it's a different thing coming off the ice after warm-up saying, oh, by the way, you're playing for them tonight.
Yeah, then you come off the ice, you walk into the locker room, the guy goes, hey, listen, clean up in aisle 9. Take this cart down there and suit up for the other team.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
You know, I had never been traded before. And
right.
It was probably one of the most devastating things that ever happened to me, because I had played 4 years. I had made a ton of friends. I was comfortable in New York.
Yeah.
I always tried to play hard. You know, Mike was in at, Keenan was in at the time. And,
right.
You know, all I wanted to do was please Mike Keenan,
right,
so that I could play. And whatever it was, whatever he wanted me to do, that's what I was going to do. And ultimately, I changed my game to just to trying to have an ability to stay in New York. And because, again, I, you know, like a lot of other people, I knew that team was close. And we had the players. And it was really difficult. And, you know, as difficult as it was for me, it was probably equally or more difficult for James Patrick. And, you know, he had been there longer than I had. And, you know, he had settled there, and he had seen the team grow to where we were. And it was just, again, for me, it was just, it had never happened to me before. And it was.
Did they give you, do you have an inkling that you were going to get traded, or did they come up to you and say, you know, you might be something might be going down, or they just, it was like a shock?
No, like, I had been, you know, everybody's rumored in trades. Like, even, you know, that year it was, and I think this was before my trade, you know, the big rumor was,
Chelios?
The big rumor was Chelios and Belfour for Leach and Richter.
Yeah. I remember the team that wanted them, yeah.
You know, so my little trade with James Patrick, that was just a little side burner. That was, you know, wasn't even something that was really going to be talked about if, you know, if this other deal went through. But it was, you know, again, it was just, it was really difficult. And, you know, I went to Hartford. I played as hard as I could there. My first game back in New York, I remember I was, you know, I just wanted to prove that, you know, what happened, you know, shouldn't have happened. And I remember Jay Wells caught me mid ice. And after the second period, I came into the locker room and told him that I didn't remember anything from the first two periods whatsoever. And at that time, it was like, oh, here, you know, have a couple, you know, normally just have a couple Tylenol and get back out there. But they knew that it was probably not that good. And so that was the end of my return to New York. But it was hard. Like, you know, James and I commuted back and forth that whole year from Rye. We practice in Hartford and come home at night and, you know, stay at our houses in Rye. And I still remember watching the Cup Finals. And, you know, there was really no hard feelings, like, towards the team. It was towards the organization or the team, because I knew how much that the fans wanted to win it. You know, I still had players on that team, like, you know, especially Leachy and Mike Richter, you know, more than any other players. But those two had gone through that whole building process, and to see them win was exciting for me. But at the same time, it was a little bit painful that I wasn't part of it.
So that's what I was going to ask you. I kind of answered the question, though. I mean, is there any animosity with the Rangers that they traded you, or you treat it as a business that you get traded? I mean, no one likes to get traded. I mean, I was never in that situation, but I'm just saying, first time coming up through the draft with the team, and then they trade you. Did you have that animosity against the Rangers for doing that?
Yeah, it's you don't realize how much of a business it really is until you know, until you get traded, or until you go into a contract negotiation or a arbitration case. That I actually went into an arbitration case with the Rangers, and I think it was after my third year, and I had scored 30 goals a year, and you know, my salary got bumped to $225,000. Yeah. And, you know, that's the two work stoppages we went through. Obviously, the first one was where the salaries really started to go. The second one was where they, you know, they kind of skyrocketed even more.
Right.
And, you know, you look around the league now, like a guy like, you know, like Marian Hossa, who scored, you know, between 28 and 34 goals his first 3 years, and his second contract was like 9 years, you know, $6 million a year.
Right.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
It's amazing.
I had to go to arbitration to get $225,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, it was different. And, you know, the cost of living obviously is, you know, a lot higher than it used to be. But, you know, the first 3 years on my contract in New York, I think I was at $125,000 for my first 3 years. And I'm living in Rye, or I'm living in Stamford, and, you know, after Uncle Sam takes his part and you pay your rent, you know, You're making a living, but you're not stockpiling that much money.
Right. Yeah, the mid-90s, then the salaries, you started getting a more consistent million-dollar hockey player by far with the lockouts like you were talking about. All right, this is the last painful question I have for you. Now, I asked Troy Millett the same thing because he had his first 2 years in the league with the Rangers. He showed a lot of promises of power forward potentially. And I asked him what, after he left New York, what prevented him from continuing on his path in his growth as an athlete. And he flat out just said confidence. He said, once I lost it, that was it. I never got it back. So looking at your career with the Rangers, very strong first four full seasons. You had a strong junior career. I mean, 16, 17, 18 years old. I mean, strong seasons, great production, great early production as a hockey player. After you left the Rangers, what prevented you from continuing your growth as a hockey player towards becoming that 70, 80-point guy per season?
You know what? I felt that when I went to Hartford, it was, you know, it took me a little while to get, you know, get used to everything. But, you know, I felt that I was still a go-to guy there. You know, they had Jeff Sanderson, Andrew Castles, myself, Glenn Wesley, Sean Burke was our goalie at the time. And, you know, I was, Pat Verbeek was there, but I was still an offensive leader on that team. I think the lockout year I finished second on the team in points.
And, right.
You know, then I got traded again. And I got traded. I remember Jimmy Rutherford called me in. He's like, you know, it has nothing to do with you as a player. It has nothing to do with, you know, what you're doing for our team. We just need a right-handed shot, and we traded you to Winnipeg for Nelson Emerson.
Right.
And that one really caught me off guard because I was an assistant captain on that team. You know, I was a leader. I was doing my job on the ice, but they needed a right-handed shot.
Yeah, you had 35 points in a short season. That's true. And then the next season you were traded. No, I got you.
Yeah. So that one was, you know, and I was a player rep. I was a player rep in Hartford. So you always wonder, you know, what if that had any repercussions,
right.
And you know, you always wonder those things. But you know, the lockout year, like during those lockouts, when you're the player rep, you put in a ton of hours and a lot of phone calls and a lot of communication with your players and the union. And it was a long year for me. Like you look at, press conferences with Trevor Linden when he was the president of the players union, and he looked like he'd been through three wars.
Right.
He had lost like 30 pounds and like he looked tired and that's the way I felt.
Yeah.
And, you know, you get traded and, you know, in Winnipeg, I just, you know, I hated it.
Right.
It was just, I just didn't like it. And it was just a bad year. I got traded there in October. I got traded out of there in March. And that's the one phone call when they called me at the trade deadline. First of all, they came in the morning and they said, you know, we're not making any moves. And then I got a call later in the afternoon. They said, we're trading you to San Jose. And I was like, thank God. And, you know, then I went to San Jose and it was a breath of fresh air. I thought, you know, I had a great, you know, month of March with San Jose.
Right.
We were a young team. I was the third oldest player when I got traded there, and then in the summer when I went to training camp, I think I was probably like the fifth youngest player. That's all the year they brought in Bernie Nichols, Kelly Rudy, Tim Hunter, Todd Gill, Ed Belfour. You know, you go through the, like they just went from probably the youngest team in the league to the oldest team in the league in one summer.
There you go. Yeah.
And you know, things weren't terrible down there. You know, I was enjoying it and, you know, maybe not putting up the numbers. I had one really serious injury where I ruptured my eardrum.
Okay.
And, that's the, that injury really set me back a lot. Like, I, you know, it took me, I think I missed probably 6 weeks because of it. And it was basically learning to walk again. Like, I had no, I had zero balance. I couldn't even stand up to, when it first happened. And I basically had to learn everything again, everything from learning to walk to changing directions and being able to keep my balance to finally getting on skates and learning how to skate again and keep my balance. The first time I was on the ice, I had to hold on to the sideboards. It's an injury that I wish I had every day on videotape to show people how serious it really was.
Right.
And, you know, really never regained my form. I ended up going to St. Louis, became more of a role player, played on a checking line. You know, we had some great offensive players there, Turgeon and Hull and McInnes. And I played with Craig Conroy and Scott Pellerin on a checking line, and we were very content with our role.
Did somebody break your hand while you were there on your team?
And then, you know, just before the playoffs, we were going to be playing Detroit in the first round, and McInnes broke his stick over my hand on the bench, and I shattered my hand in four places, and it was just a string of injuries from the time I ruptured my eardrum. Then I, you know, shattered my hand when one of my teammates broke his stick over my hand while I was sitting on the bench, and then I went to, you know, in the expansion draft, went to went to Nashville and blew my knee out on a knee-on-knee hit with Steve Yzerman of, you know, could have been anybody but Steve Yzerman. Basically went through 2 years of rehab, and the first time after my ninth surgery, it was time to step on the ice for the first time, and I took like three strides and I walked in the trainer's room and I said, I'm done. I can't play anymore.
So injuries settling in your late 20s and early 30s, especially with the knee, that's what pretty much kept you from proceeding with the rest of your career.
Yeah.
The incident with, you know, I'm sure it was an accident, but the incident with Al McInnes, how horrible did he feel that he busted your hand? Slamming his stick on the boards.
He felt terrible. Like, it was the way it transpired is he's on the offensive blue line.
Right.
And I was on the bench. I was having my skate sharpened. That's why I didn't have my glove on. So I'd taken my skate off, and somebody was coming for a line change. So I reached to open the door, and I had my hand on top of the boards. Puck jumped over Al's stick. He turned around and, like, basically in frustration was going to break his stick over the board.
Right.
But my hand was there.
Ow.
And, like, right away, it was probably the most excruciating pain I'd ever been in. And, you know, I crumpled. So now I'm walking in the dressing room, the trainer sharpening my skate, and my hand is bleeding, and the trainer's like, okay, what's going on here? Like, I've got your skate, and you're hobbling in with one skate on. And I crumpled on the floor, and Al came in because he knew. He told me afterwards, and that he thought he ended my career. Like, that's how hard he hit me. And looking back, if I would have seen the slash coming a split second before it actually hit me,
right,
he probably would have chopped my four fingers right off.
Oh my God.
And but he never finished the game. He was in the, you know, he was in the bathroom throwing up, and you know, he was on the bus before the third period even started, and he just sat in the back of the bus. And it was Al was a good friend of mine, and, you know, I still see him, and, you know, I still show him the big bump I have on my hand, and
yeah.
That's you.
He owes you a car or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, something.
He made a lot of money in his career.
Darren, I have to ask you a non-hockey-related question. It's been bugging me. I am a big time horse racing fan, and I wanted to ask you a question. Have you any relation to Ronnie Turcotte?
Absolutely not.
Okay,
he's not related.
I get
to him
a lot, so.
You do.
You know what his?
Well, because he's from Canada, you know.
But tell him about your cousin. That's in horse racing. He thought that he was related to him.
My cousin is a producer for a horse racing show out in L.A., and he, for some reason.
We had to ask you because I couldn't verify whether it was true or not. And the guy's from Canada.
Well, Secretariat.
With Secretariat.
He told me that you are, so I had to ask you anyway. So, you know.
So, like, we got to ask
you. And
you're
from Canada, and that's the thing.
You know, Darren, the story you told about your knee getting blown out by Steve Eisman, strangely enough, he did the same thing to Chris Pronger. Now, Pronger wound up having concussion issues, too, at the end. But when he played for St. Louis, they were in the playoff series with Detroit. And I don't know if it was the same type of incident, but Pronger was going to throw a hit on Eisman, and Eisman kind of low-bridged him, you know, whether you see those calls being made nowadays.
Yeah.
And it done that to him. And the other thing that you were talking about being a player rep, and you mentioned Trevor Linden. And I didn't know if you knew this, but Steve Larmer was a player rep, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
And he was always heavily involved. And he is the only guy that I know of that is retired as long as he is that has 1,000 games played and over 1,000 points and averaged more than a point per game. And, like, when you were talking about sometimes you feel a little weird dealing with management and, like, you know, you were traded and all that, I think, you know, I think you're valid in that kind of thinking because Larmer went through that kind of stuff too. He's not in the Hall of Fame yet. And he also had that consecutive game streak played, which got broken because he was holding out before he got traded to the Rangers. Otherwise, he would have been the all-time Iron Man of hockey. He never missed a game.
Yeah.
So I think...
Well, you never really know. Like, again, it's a business, and you know, things are said during negotiations, and whether it's contract or, you know, NHLPA negotiations, that you say them because you're fighting for your side, but you never know what the other side's going to do.
All right,
Darren, I just want to ask you real quick, because we're running out of time here a little bit, about the Rangers and that division this year. What do you think of it? Are you following
what's going on? Because he's a big Islander fan. He's excited. His team hasn't done anything.
Well,
this century.
The Islanders have not won a playoff series in 22 years, so this is big for me.
Are you following what's going on nowadays, Darren? Do you keep up with the NHL?
I try as much as I can to follow.
Okay.
You know, I really think that in today's game, you make the playoffs, you can win the Stanley Cup. And more so than back in 89, 90.
Right.
You know, like how many, it used to be 1 versus 16, and, you know, that was before my time, but it used to be 1 versus 16.
Yeah, when we were young. 14.
Right.
We're the same age. When we were young growing up, this is what we saw on TV, 1 through 16, 2 through 15.
When you used to do a playoff pool to pick the winners, like, if anybody high or lower than seventh was picked in an upset, that was like your wild card.
Right.
That was like your big long shot. Now, you see upsets all the time in the first round. And I know it's 1 versus 4 in the conference, but they're just, like I said, it's just hot goaltending, John Drews, you know, a little bit of momentum here and there, and
right,
anything can happen. And you know, it's exciting for the game, and it's exciting to definitely watch and follow.
Do you see anything teams that stand out? I mean, the Rangers have been red hot for the last 3 months, 2.5 months.
Since December, they really
they've been red hot. I mean, the Islanders have been consistently playing well. First place. I mean, this is incredible.
But this season, more than any, Darren, really nobody stands out as, like, the front runner. Like, Montreal's playing really well, but Carey Price is carrying them.
Yeah.
I mean, he's going to win the Vezina and possibly the Hart Trophy. You know, Nashville's having a good season, but they've stumbled lately. The Rangers, you know, they've been taking steps. Semifinals a couple years ago. They went to the finals last year. Like you described, nowadays, any playoff matchup's tough. You know, L.A. won the cup last year. They played 7 games each of their first 3 rounds. And when they won their first cup in 2012, they were an 8 seed. So you're absolutely right.
Just,
there really is nobody that stands out. Like, this team's definitely going to be there in the end. Chicago's always there, but Kane's hurt. So now that hinders them a little.
And a lot of things, you know, you talk about experience. And,
right.
You know, the L.A.'s of the world, you know, are going to play the Islanders of the world at some point, and it's, you know, the experience is going to be a big factor.
Right. Are there any players you follow nowadays that remind you of yourself when you were playing?
Any players?
Yeah, any goal scorer out there that reminds you of yourself, or any players that you admire the way they play more than others?
No one that really reminds, like, I don't try and compare myself to any of the players that are playing right now. But,
right.
I love Patrick Kane, and I love, you know, the way Jonathan Toews plays, and
yep.
his compete level is just, you know, and he's not a big guy. He commands respect by the way he plays, and I really like watching those two play.
Well, you should be a big fan of Marty St. Louis, because he's not a big guy at all. I see him all the time, and
he's another one. He's, you know, he's just a, you know, well, it's almost like Marty's a freak of nature, and
right.
You know, he's playing a big man's game with a, you know, in a little body with a absolutely huge heart.
Well, yeah.
I had a chance to meet him last year. He's a great, great ambassador to the game of hockey.
Absolutely.
What do you think of the young guy, Johnny Gaudreau, from Calgary Flames? Because he's supposed to, he's only 170 pounds.
Don't know a lot about him.
Small guy, good scorer, though.
He's a U.S. born player, is he not?
New Jersey, yeah.
And I remember his name coming up when I was involved with USA Hockey programs, and you know, he's always been a super skilled player, and again, in today's game, it's skill, speed. And if you have the size, it's definitely an asset, but it's not a requirement.
Yeah, I mean, the Islanders have one of the top five players in the league today. Johnny Tavares is excellent. I mean, I'll put him there with Kenny Malkin and Alex Ovechkin, and you got Stamkos and Crosby. On the Rangers, there's a guy with potential. Hasn't realized it yet, but in terms of, like, we talked about, you know, you had speed, a guy like Mike Gartner. You talked about Paul Coffey before. But Darren, in terms of if you get a chance and you watch closely with the Rangers, in terms of size, strength, and speed, I don't think I've ever seen a guy like Chris Kreider. He's 6'3", 225 pounds, and he's the fastest guy on the team. He is, you know, and it'd be a shame if he doesn't realize the potential, because he should be eventually a 30-goal scorer and that power presence down behind the goal line, banging along the boards and stuff. But he's got a ways to go, but he shows a lot of promise, and the speed is just unlike anything I've seen with that size.
Another American guy too. He's born up in Mass, right?
I've liked Chris Kreider and the way he plays since he started with the Rangers coming out of college. And you know, he has all the tools, he has all the assets, he has the potential to become a very, very good player in this league. Not to say he's not right now, but his upside potential is definitely probably greater than his numbers right now.
Yeah, and now with the Rangers and Islanders both playing very well, at the same time, will that pique your interest come playoff time if they match up with each other?
You know, my interest will remain the same for the Rangers. You know, it's been a great organization for me, and they treat me, they still treat me extremely well, better than any other organization. I think it's a credit to, you know, to the New York Rangers organization that they treat their former players with respect. And, you know, even though they traded me back in 93, I still, deep down inside, I'm a New York Ranger.
Well, you know what, Darren? 20-plus years later, 2015, you're still in the top 50 scorers in Rangers history. 255 points in 325 games. I'll tell you what, you were a favorite of mine when you first came in. You did a great job in your four seasons here with the, you know, with the scoring goals and the playoffs and the whole team playing, building towards that title. I appreciate what you did. And I want to thank you. You spent more than enough time with us tonight. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. I really appreciate
it. And really, thanks for being here.
And good luck with the coaching. And I really appreciate it.
Oh, well, thanks. And I hope to be back. I was down in New York last year for the Montreal series, and hope to be back sometime this spring. Maybe it'll be against the Islanders.
Well, I'll tell you what, Darren, if you come down to a Ranger game, you could send me a text or get a hold of my producer because I'm always at the Ranger games. I do statistics.
Okay.
I do official scoring for the Rangers for the NHL.
Okay.
So if you get a chance, you let them know, and I'll come meet up with you wherever they have you. I know they always honor the guys between periods and on the scoreboard. I'll try and meet up with you before a game.
If you do the official scoring, just keep – I'm four away from 200 goals, so just don't be scared to throw in a couple there for me.
I'll see what I can do with that. We'll try to fudge the records. But thank you for your time. And
all right, thanks, guys.
All right, all the best. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
All right. All right, there you go, folks. That might be one of the longest interviews we've ever had.
He was fantastic.
And Darren Turcotte, great Ranger, early 90s. I wish he was like a few other guys. I wish he was here when they won the Stanley Cup. He wasn't, but he was a part of building that winning team. So we're going to take a break right now. We'll come back and we'll get to football and boxing, maybe a little baseball. Back after this.
Sports Radio New York and AM 1240 WGBB are proud to announce the new Sports Talk 1240, along with the launch of a brand new website at sportstalk1240.com. Check out our new site for information about upcoming shows, as well as easy access to past shows, articles, our live studio webcam, and more. Of course, be sure to tune in to Sports Talk 1240 every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. on AM 1240 WGBB, or visit sportstalk1240.com for ways to listen to the live broadcast online or from your iPhone. We're excited about these new changes and hope you will be too.
So you're looking for a great club but don't want to go into Manhattan, or you'd like to find a new restaurant to check out, or you're buying a house here on Long Island and you'd like to find out about a certain area. Wouldn't it be nice if you could find out all the information in just one spot? Well, you can. LongIslandExchange.com. It's all you need to find out all about Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com for hotspots, classifieds, news, and more. LongIslandExchange.com is designed with only the Long Islander in mind. Get the best of Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com. Discover Long Island all over again at LongIslandExchange.com.
If you're trying to quit smoking, dipping, or chewing tobacco, you don't have to do it alone. Nicotine Anonymous is a 12-step program of recovery that meets regularly in your area. There are no dues or fees. The only requirement for membership is a desire to be free of nicotine. For information and meetings near you, call 877-TRY-NIC-A. That's 877-TRY-NICA, or visit nicotine-anonymous.org. Let us share our experience, strength, and hope with you.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240. Check us out every Sunday night at 8 p.m. right here on AM 1240 WGBB. And visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Making simple changes in your everyday travel choices makes a big difference to New York's air quality. Trip chain, use mass transit, rideshare, bike, or walk. Visit cleanairny.org to learn more. Clean Air New York, breathe it in. A public service message brought to you by the New York State Department of Transportation.
And now, back to Sports Talk 1240.
All right, folks, we're back after that long interview. I hope you enjoyed it. A lot of stories from Darren Turcotte. Spent a better part of his better years with the Rangers, I tell you. Good goal scorer, good hockey player.
For a six-round pick.
And he could skate.
Going to the All-Star game, becoming an All-Star is fantastic.
Yeah.
Very big accomplishment.
No, I liked him. He was a hard worker, and a very humble guy. You could hear it in his voice when he's talking to you. So we got some callers on hold. Let's go to Pete in Stony Brook first, if we can. Pete, are you there? Speak up.
Yes, hi, Derek. How are you?
What's going on? What do you want to talk about tonight, buddy?
I want to thank you for getting another great Ranger on. You do a good job of bringing the history on. Good to hear from the old-timers.
Yeah, it just so happens that I had back-to-back guests where they came from that same era. They both came up. They were both rookies, him and Millett, in 89-90 with Nielsen. So it's just worked out that way. We're kind of honoring the teams before the Stanley Cup teams. So that's good.
Yeah, it's nice to hear from him. And I just peeked on your webcam there. I thought it was Halloween for a second with your partner's outfit there.
Oh,
he's got his
eye on the jersey.
Pete, are you jealous of this outfit? Is that what it is? You're jealous that we're in first
place? After a decade and a half of futility and great draft picks, you should be good.
You know what, we're going to play his theme song right now because he's excited about the Islanders. They're making a lot of things happen. We call Johnny Laverne here at WGBB.
Oh, brother. Come on, we'll have to put up with this.
I got you, right?
Come on.
got a chance. That's Johnny's new theme song for the Islanders, Pete. How do you like it?
Oh, Pete, let me ask you this question, though. Are you upset you don't like the jersey because he's leading the league in points right now? Is that what it is? Well, you don't like the jersey because we're in first place?
I know you're a true Islander fan. I've seen you wear it before, even when they weren't winning. I just can't stand the guys coming out of the closet now that can't even name the
I agree with you. I agree with you. There's a lot of them. So I'm starting to notice more and more.
You can wear it because you are a true fan.
Thank you.
He is.
Hey, it's coming down to the wire. The chips are going to hit the ground, and we're going to see what we're going to say. The Rangers are playing great.
No, it's going to be good.
Pittsburgh.
Looking forward to Tuesday night.
Pittsburgh. Me too. Pittsburgh's on fire as well.
It's good. It's like the old days. It's going to be a good. It's going to be a good time. I'm looking forward to it. Hockey is almost like it's important again in New York.
Yeah, like it was.
It's certainly taking over right now with basketball floundering as much as it is in this area. And I'll tell you what, Pete. You know, like I said, talking to Darren Turcotte, those Ranger teams, Roger Nielsen was the building point for that 94 team. Because I mean, Keenan came in here and just made a bunch of moves. You know, he brought in Greg Gilbert, Steve Ballmer, Noonan and Mateau. That was just four guys from Chicago through the course of that year, right? Now you're watching this Ranger team, and they've added pieces. You know, they picked up Marty St. Louis last year. You know, Rick Nash a few years ago. They added Keith Yandel. But they've kept more of their core young players maybe than that team did. That team had, you know, they had Leach and Richter, and they had Kovalev and Zubov. But this team might have a few more, and that's what I thought was good about the Yandel trade. They didn't sacrifice any of those core young forwards, and they're scoring more goals as a team right now than they have in the previous 3, 4, 5 years. Right?
Can I ask Pete a question, though, real quick? I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, I don't think Pete has a question. Go ahead, Pete.
Pete, what did you think of the trade that the Rangers made right before?
I think it was great.
Yeah, I agree with you.
You know, this day and age with the first-round draft picks, they just signed Kevin Hayes.
Right.
I mean, they got Hayes for nothing. You got Zuccarello for nothing.
Duclair might be a good
player. Purple Hayes was definitely like picking up an extra first round pick because
Chicago lost their chance to sign him. Now.
Yeah, he was a first round pick at the Blackhawks. They failed to sign him to an entry contract before he was done with college.
Yeah, if they're smart enough, you can make up for the first round picks by signing the undrafted players, and they seem to be trying to stockpile talent that way.
Well, the one thing picking up Yandel tells me, and is that, you know, they saw what they did last year in the playoffs. They've had a very good regular season to this point. That trade tells me that they're definitely going for it. Like, they believe they have enough to win the title now. And I think part of that is they're banking on Lundqvist coming back healthy and getting back to the, you know, style of play he's accustomed to.
But you guys haven't missed a beat with it without him, though, because you know.
No, they're 10-2-3 without Lundqvist.
He's playing great in net right now.
It's a testament to the team. They're pulling together and they're building up points.
Game.
What was that?
Salvador's a little more comfortable every game.
Well, give it up.
The world isn't on him anymore.
Give it up. Right. Give it up a blue chip like Duclair. If they don't make the playoffs this year, and you gave him up, how do you feel about that?
It's one of those hindsights. I mean, what's
I'll
take a stand.
I mean, no, I know they're going to make the playoffs. I'm saying if they get knocked out in the first round or knocked out in the second round,
you got to go for it when you have the talent. Lundqvist is 33.
Right. And you got Yandel for this playoff run and next year's playoff run at the least.
I like him.
You have to deal with trying to sign him. So, listen, I told you, Pete, I'll root for Duclair to score 500 goals in his career if the Rangers can get one cup.
Yeah.
Listen, Tony Amonte scored 400 goals. He had a great career. But Noonan and Mateau, how do you put a price tag on that?
Exactly.
Right?
And then you look back, even at the Rangers' first-round draft picks in the last decade, they're really not sterling, you know?
No, they've had some solid guys like a Stahl. Kreider's been pretty good so far, but
there's no real superstar in that group.
Yeah, no Hall of Famer. You'd have to go back to Brian Leetch, right?
And they're picking late in the first round, so it doesn't hurt as much as if you gave away a top five pick.
I think stability, continuity, and they lost some guys because of last year's playoff run, but they kept the core important players together, and they're moving forward. And recent, the last 15-plus games, you've seen a pickup in offense from Zuccarello and Kreider and Hagelin somewhat. And Hayes is a rookie. I mean, he's having a real good season. I really don't have anything bad to say about this team. Even the fourth line has played better recently, and Dominic Moore is a steady presence there. He is a great penalty killer, and he is a hard worker. And I love what's going on with this team. And the coach, just like Keenan came in and took over for Nielsen, here you got Vigneault came in and took over for Tortorella. And hopefully, I know Keenan did it in 1 year, but hopefully Vigneault gets it done here in year two or year three, whatever it takes, because they got the personnel and the production that they need.
Just to talk about the Blackhawk
Ranger game. It's a good game. It's a shutout going into
Still scoreless right now?
Yes, 0-0.
All right, folks, so you know out there in hockey land, it's scoreless, third period, Chicago, New York, original six matchup. Anything else,
Pete?
What else you want?
Thank you guys for having a place to talk about hockey.
Yeah, we do the best we can. Anything else you want to talk about the current team or the past teams with Turco?
No, I'm good for now, sir.
Pete, one more thing before you go.
Hold on, he's got one more thing for you.
A little yes, yes, yes. Let's go Islanders. That's what I want to give you right there.
Never happened.
I'm sorry you had to endure that. I apologize.
You got to face reality. It's happening.
Thanks for the call, Pete. Let's go to Rich. Rich from Manhattan's on the line next. Rich, how you doing tonight? Oh, we lost him. He'll call back. He's a staple call to this radio station anyway, so he'll get back to us. So, you know, you're all happy, and I know you're waiting. You're hoping that the Blackhawks take the lead. I know.
Of course.
I hope you don't get it till
we
leave at the least, because I don't want to hear you.
We beat Toronto on Monday, and then we take care of business on Tuesday.
All
what are you going to do?
All right. I understand.
It's a big game. The Islanders always get up for those games.
Well, is he back with us? Okay, now we have our second call of the night. Rich from Manhattan. How's it going, Rich?
Let me read you the quote from Darren Turcotte about Keenan after the trade from the New York Times.
Go ahead.
He said, I should try and play a little more physically. I played much more physically than I had in previous years. Obviously, it wasn't good enough.
Right.
And it says in the article that Turcotte was not a favorite of Neil Smith, and he failed to win Keenan over and was relegated to the fourth line, despite coming into camp in terrific shape,
right,
in a position center where the Rangers lack depth.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure, if memory serves correct, that Mike Keenan had a plan from the minute he came to the Rangers. And it started after he signed his monstrous contract to coach. It started with acquiring, the first acquisition he made was Greg Gilbert as a free agent from his days with Chicago. And it didn't end there. And I remember hearing all the time that he wanted to trade for Chelios, and he would have given Leach up for that. Listen, do you think you could dispute that if that happened and the Rangers won a Stanley Cup? No. I mean, if it happened and they didn't win, yeah. So something's predicated on what truly happened in the end, which they won the Stanley Cup. But when he came in, he had a plan. He added four or five Chicago Blackhawks. I think he added Mike Hudson too. So add him to the list with Lorimer and Noonan, Mateau and Gilbert, right? So there was no question he was going to do what he felt he needed to do. And the two things that Mike Keenan did know in terms of putting together a winning team, because he took the Philly Flyers to the Cup and he took the Blackhawks, he knew two things better than anybody. Conditioning, his team was going to be in better shape than anybody, and he knew personnel. He knew what he needed, okay? I wish Turcotte was still on the team, and I wish Mike Gartner would have stayed, but he moved Gartner to get Glenn Anderson. If that didn't work out, there would have been some answers for that one, because Anderson didn't play after that playoff run for the Rangers ever again. But he did play that playoff season, and they won a Stanley Cup, and he was a big part of their forechecking and banging behind the goal line and setting up goals. He was a big force for them. So
I am so glad that Rich called. Rich, how are you doing, buddy?
Now that Tikkanen trade, where they moved the personal belongings from locker room to locker room.
Yeah,
that was incredible.
Pretty good, right?
I did have to look that up, and the New York Times says, well, they didn't have to move their stick or their skates very far,
right,
but it didn't get into the thing about how someone moved it for them before they told them.
Well, he happened to
but
be there.
That's a heck of a story.
Yeah, he happened to be there. The writers aren't down there during that time on warm-ups. They're up in their other area. So,
But I want to go back in time to that famed 7-6 Game 3 in 1983.
Yeah, let's go back to that, because Mike Bossy showed absolutely no respect to my partner.
Well, Mike Bossy, back in the
day, he would never be welcomed on this show ever.
Back in the day.
You better hope I don't meet him, too.
He was snotty back in the day.
He was, Rich. It was uncalled for.
Trottier is a much more ingenious
guy. Trottier is actually a great guy.
He's a wonderful guy.
And Dennis Poppin's a nice guy, too. I met him once.
Poppin is a good guy. I met
Poppin. In that 7-6 game, even though John's team and my team lost that game.
Yes.
Tell everyone that is one of the most exciting Islander games I've ever seen in my life.
It has to be.
18 seconds. They scored and they blew an early whistle.
They pulled Billy Smith out after he gave up a goal early in the second period. Then somehow there was one Islander goal. I forgot who scored it, but it was on a breakaway where they slashed one of the Ranger defensemen at the line. And he went in on a breakaway and scored. I forgot who it was. And then Denny Potvin scored. And then Bossy's thing, Bruce Hood was the referee. He blew a quick whistle. He lost sight of the puck. And Al Arbor, who never shows emotion, was standing on top of the board.
Yes, he was.
That tells you everything about that. But, hey, it was a great comeback that that almost was.
But it wasn't.
And then they settled it down the next game. Billy Smith got it together. They won. Then they went back to the Coliseum in Game 5 was the game that Bob Bourne went end-to-end.
Oh, he did the Bobby Orr move. Is that what you're saying?
Went end-to-end like Scott Niedermeyer almost.
Didn't the Islanders win in six games? Like the Rangers
they did win
in. The Rangers didn't win a game after that 7-6 game. It was over.
It was over.
And the Islanders won their fourth straight Stanley Cup.
Incredible. And history was made.
History is
made. But that was almost a great comeback. But they made up for it. It wasn't like the comeback in February of this year, was it? When the Rangers were down by two goals on three different occasions and came back and beat the Islanders in one of the last games at the Coliseum. Was it like that? No. Because we finished the job.
What do you mean it was one of the last games at the Coliseum? What are you talking about? That was the last time.
That's the second to last one. And this Tuesday will be the last one at the Coliseum.
This is the last game, yes.
And that was one of the more exciting regular season games I had ever seen.
I was a little sick over
that. How about you, Rich? Was that one of the more exciting regular season games you've seen?
I have to talk.
Exciting but sloppy.
Yeah, very sloppy.
I'll take sloppy.
Six goals. Rich, I want to ask you a question, and nobody better to answer than you.
You're the question. You're supposed to be the answer.
I'm asking Rich because Rich is a hockey guru.
Ask him.
What did you think of what the Islanders did right before trade deadline? Are you happy with what they did? Or do you think they should have did a little more?
My main concern was the team chemistry seemed to be okay before the trade. You bring in new guys, you change the chemistry.
Right. You're either adding a piece
You don't know if it's going to work or not.
Right.
If it's not broken, why fix it?
Right. Well, the Rangers were able to add a piece to their defensive unit without subtracting a key player. They subtracted a player that was moving in out of the lineup with Hunwick. More in Hunwick with that number six defenseman. So that wasn't a big deal to me.
But backup goalies don't play in the playoffs.
Unless the starter gets hurt, right? So, like, Tokarski had to play his brains out last year against the Rangers just to keep him in the series. So it is good to have a stronger backup. That's not a bad move to make. You know, you never know what's going to happen.
No. But the Islanders, they're basically falling into a spot that I thought they would.
Right.
I still think they're going to finish third in the division.
Well, they're doing much better than you thought, right?
Well, when they Wojciech and Leddy, I said that they would make the playoffs, but it would be barely.
Right. Sitting in first place right now, do you think
March 8th we're still in first?
You think Jack Capuano might be the coach of the year?
No.
Really?
Peter.
Who?
Peter Laviolette.
Why? They've been decent in recent years.
Not last year.
That was last year. So what? What does that mean? The Islanders missed the playoffs last year too.
Well, Rich, if they get to 100 points. And he wins 50 games, he definitely gets it.
You're telling me that you're not more impressed with what Capuano's doing than Laviolette?
I am 100%.
Harris is in the sixth year. He should be doing this.
Oh, come on. Everybody's seen what Pekka Rinne's done before. Come on. You got to be kidding me.
No.
That's why I don't like Islander fans. You show no respect for a coach who's doing something for this team that nobody's done other than Al Arbor. Right? His next win, he'll have 43 wins. That'll be the only time anybody else has done that other than Al.
Had his 200th win the other day against Nashville.
That's only because they keep him around because he doesn't make a lot.
I mean, the Islanders have only won one playoff series without Al Arbor. Do you know which series that was? Because if I ask my partner, he probably won't get it.
Pittsburgh.
No, it's not
that
Pittsburgh.
That was the Easter Sunday marathon.
That's right, when LaFontaine scored. The seven-game series against Washington.
Oh, Washington, right, I'm sorry. Told
the team after they lost the next round of Philly, S in summer, and Story didn't like it, and they got rid of him.
Well, that's the only series they've won without Al Arbor. And you're telling me that Capuano's he's not coach of the year? He might win 50 games, and you're saying he's not? Well, I think you're wrong.
Nashville has done a lot more with a lot less.
Oh, come on. What do you mean a lot less?
Sure.
I'll give you that much. They don't have a John Tavares, but come on. This Islander team has not won a playoff series in over 20 years.
Doesn't matter.
Oh, that doesn't matter. Okay, they're the only team between basketball and hockey, the only team that's gone that long without a series win.
From an emotional standpoint, no.
Emotional? I don't care about the Islanders. I hope they lose.
Peter came in and replaced the only coach the Predators ever had.
Yeah, so what? Peter Laviolette already won.
Washington.
He already won a Stanley Cup. He already coached your team, by the way, was the last time the Islanders won 42 games in a season.
And they shouldn't have got rid of him.
He's already proven what kind of a coach he is. I don't really think he needs to win Coach of the Year again. He probably won it once already. Great American coach, though, one of the most accomplished. But I don't see that. I think if everything ends the way it is right now, if the Islanders come in first place, I'm telling you right now, Capuano's got to win Coach of the Year.
I agree.
They're not going to. Well, first of all, they're not going to win a Stanley Cup with this guy.
I didn't say they were going to win a Stanley Cup. I said if they come in first place.
Not with this guy as coach.
Oh, come on, stop.
Never.
Stop. Well, first of all, if they did win a Stanley Cup this year, that would be one of the most amazing accomplishments
ever.
It would
be. I'd be surprised. I'm not counting on it. I'm counting on a first-round win against Pittsburgh,
yeah, okay.
And then the second round, it depends who they play.
Yeah, okay. That's just great. You got anything else to say before we
Rich,
end up on
you know who I, you know who I want to play in the second round?
I can't see them beating your team or Montreal or Tampa.
Why is that?
Now you just pissed off my partner.
Around the team.
Why is that?
I think the other teams are better, well-rounded.
You think the Rangers are a better team than the Islanders?
Oh, absolutely.
No way.
And they have the experience of being in the finals last year.
The Rangers got a good team this year, but they're not better.
Playoff experience.
Can't underestimate.
They're more
don't underestimate.
They have to go through a loss, a big key loss, before they go all the way. The Rangers lost that final.
He's looking at the usual process.
I'm not saying the Islanders are going to the Stanley Cup. I'm saying they're definitely going to win. At least a round or two rounds.
You better hope they win a playoff round.
If they
turn out like Colorado,
if they don't win a playoff round, it's a waste of a season.
Pretty. You might resign from this radio station if they don't win a playoff series.
If they play Pittsburgh, they'll beat Pittsburgh. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Pittsburgh looks pretty good to me right now. We got another caller on hold? I got another caller. You have nothing to offer. You have anything else to say before we hang up
Rich,
on you?
Rich, they're going to beat Toronto.
Yeah, one football note.
Go ahead, tell us.
It's going to be hard to block Sue for two times every year. He's great.
Do you know
what was that? Dominican, you're saying?
Let me just tell you something.
I got $19 million for
you know
1 year.
Don't hang up on him yet. Rich, let me just tell you something.
$19 million a year.
The
for
Dolphins
6 years.
Got Ndamukong Suh, right?
Yes.
The Jets got Brandon Marshall.
Yeah, but he's done.
Hold on. The Bills got LeSean McCoy, right?
1,000 yards.
Just say yes or no.
Years.
Can you just finish
hold on,
this?
Hold Rich. I disagree with you. Hold on. I disagree with him about Marshall being done. Marshall had
nobody
a
nobody said he's done. All I'm saying is this.
He just said
the Dolphins
gone.
Got Ndamukong Suh. The Jets got Brandon Marshall.
And Shady McCoy.
The Bills got LeSean McCoy. And the Patriots are going to get another division title. So what does it all really mean?
Well, that's probably true.
I mean, what are we doing here? But you happy with the acquisition of Brandon Marshall?
No, he just said no.
No, I didn't say I wasn't happy about it. I'm just saying if you expect him to be the player that he was in Denver,
he's 31
it's not going to happen.
He goes up against one player. He's got to get open. Who's going to throw him the ball? Listen, he's a big target.
They need a quarterback.
And he's got talent.
I mean, look,
buddy,
I agree with you, Rich.
Look,
they need a quarterback.
If Philadelphia wants to draft Mariota so bad, they should trade up, get that sixth pick from the Jets.
Why?
And throw in Nick Foles.
There you go. Thank you. I said the same exact thing.
Why should we give up the pick? Why do they want him so bad?
Gave up the pick and
I'm not giving him anything.
Get a swap, get a first and second offer,
no,
and maybe a first next year.
I want three first round picks if you want Mariota that bad. That's what I would say to him.
I don't want Mariota.
Why not?
I don't think he's that
good. Why? Because he didn't play for Stanford? You don't know how good he's going to be.
I don't think he's that good.
All right. Well, he's not Andrew Luck, but I'd rather take my chances. Nick Foles is damaged goods. I don't want him.
I like Nick Foles. I like him when he
I like him, too.
2 years ago, Foles.
He's real good at Arizona. I don't want him.
Very good.
I want to know why Chip Kelly wants this guy so badly. So then I wanna raid his draft closet for him to get that player. If that's it. I would wait till draft day, and then he could tell me in 15 minutes how badly he wants Mariota, and then I'll think
the
about
Jets
trading.
They don't have anyone to throw the ball. They need a new quarterback.
They need a quarterback. I agree. 1,000%.
Bring back Kenny O'Brien. He'll be fine.
The ball to him. It doesn't matter.
Stop. Nick Foles. Give me a break.
I agree.
Give me a break. And if he was that good, then Chip Kelly would put him right back in there. And get back to work. 2 years ago, we threw 27 touchdowns and two picks.
You don't know what you're talking
we
about.
We got another call. No, that's it. Rich, we'll talk to you soon. Let's get to the next call. We got John on hold from West Hampton. John, what's going on?
Hey, how are you?
Very good.
How's it going, John?
I want to talk a little about the Jets.
Okay, let's talk about the Jets.
Yeah, and Brandon Marshall, man, I think it's going to cost them a lot more than a fifth-round pick, man. This guy is nothing but trouble everywhere. He's great the first year, and after that, he implodes.
I guess we got to be happy. We only gave up a fifth round pick then, right? Because when he moved to Denver, they gave. When he left Denver for Miami, they had to give up two second round picks.
Yeah, but
and then when he went to Chicago, they gave up two third round picks. So I guess that we only gave up a fifth round. I guess we got to be happy with that, right?
But John, let me tell you something. A fifth round pick is only a 20% chance of becoming a pro.
In the
NFL.
If you're wasting
it's really
time,
no risk.
If this guy blows up the locker room, you know, he could be another Braylon Edwards, Antonio Holmes.
He could be worse behavior-wise. You never know, right?
Right. He's a great, you know, he's got God-given abilities, you know, but his attitude and key,
he's a monster.
Chemistry, you leave a lot to be desired.
Last year, because he was hurt, was the first year in 7 years that he didn't get 1,000 yards. He gets like 100 catches.
Yeah, 60 catches, whatever. John, you know what my problem with this whole thing is, John? And listen, I understand he's talented, right? You got him with Decker. you still need a running back to go with Ivory. Whatever you're going to do offensively, who's going to be the quarterback? You draft Mariota, you bring in a free agent, whatever it's going to be. The one thing that sticks out in my mind is, really, what receiver, outside of the two receivers that played with Peyton Manning in 2006, Reggie Wayne and Marvin Harrison, what receivers really put a team over the top? And how come teams like Pittsburgh, think about Pittsburgh, John, they get rid of Plaxico Burress, they get rid of Santonio Holmes, they got rid of Mike Wallace. Why do those kind of teams, why do the teams that are stable and proven winners, why do they get rid of receivers instead of overpaying them?
Because they have good scouting, too.
Right.
They can scout the players who fit their system. You know, the Jets don't have a quarterback to get Brandon Marshall the ball. And what has he done to every quarterback that hasn't done that, you know?
Criticize?
Well, he's bipolar. I agree with you.
He
threw everyone under the bus. Why don't we go for, like, a Vincent Jackson and Mike Glennon? You know, you can improve the team right there.
You would be adverse to bringing in Mike Glennon as a quarterback to compete, is what you're saying.
I would definitely. And Vincent Jackson, you know, he's got a few years left. And
that's another receiver.
Brandon Marshall with the deep ball. But even Andre Johnson for a year, you know. But
you mean you want to bring in another receiver to play with Marshall? Is that what you want to do?
No, I was saying I would have done that instead. You know?
Oh, instead. I'm not a big guy in terms of bringing in free agent wide receivers for the example I gave you with Pittsburgh. You know, those kind of teams let them go, and then they move on to the next receiver. I'm a big fan of drafting on the offensive line, building up your linebacking core. Because the only thing the Jets got going for them is their defensive line with Richardson and Wilkerson. Those guys have to be studs because now they got a lot of emptiness in prior drafts. But I want to know where the offensive linemen are going to be.
We need a linebacker. You know, we need a lineman. But you know, even like a running back like Shane Vereen would be perfect, the pass catching guy. But the Jets never have the offensive calls.
Right.
You know, last year they had two guys they could have got the ball in space, Chris Johnson and Percy Harvin, and they never did it. They're the only game breakers.
They made their mistake by not giving Vic the starting job out of training camp, or at least letting him compete legitimately.
And they didn't use Johnson. That was the first year Johnson didn't rush for 1,000 yards in his career. It was against this year.
He definitely lost something. Like you could see when guys are ready to hit him, he would kind of go into the field position.
Right.
You know, he's not elusive, but he's still fast.
Yeah.
And if you get him in space, he's going to outrun everyone.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's just. Although I read the paper today, he couldn't outrun a bullet yesterday, right? He got shot yesterday.
Yeah, he got shot down in Florida somewhere. That's what I saw on the internet today. So
he's not faster than a speeding bullet anymore.
He's not Superman, not at all. Are you happy with retaining David Harris? You happy with that at least?
Yeah, I mean he's a team player, and why not? He's a good player. He's not a great player, but we need one linebacker. We need cornerbacks because, Calvin Pryor played out of position. He's not a coverage guy. He's a hammer.
John? There's another position that's really bothered me. You know, I understand you got to get defensive backs, but how many picks are we going to win? Now, Pryor's a safety. He had a concussion in training camp right away.
Yeah, but he did play out of
position.
Hold
on. Let me finish this. I played out. He's a safety. He is a safety. He's not a cornerback.
Right.
They drafted Kyle Wilson. The guy never evolved. He did nothing. Drew Milner came in with an injury history at Alabama. He's done nothing.
Cut him.
I got to be honest with you. Right now, I'm tired of drafting defensive backs.
Cut him.
Find them in free agency. Find them off scrap heaps. It's almost like with wide receivers. You need to build up your front seven and your offensive line.
I would never draft another cornerback. You know, later in the draft, you take a chance, but how many busts have they had? I mean, it's like
too many recently. Busts. It's not like they didn't try to get guys.
And you go for something, sure. Go for the best player that's not a cornerback. That's my take.
Right.
You know, it's like, or a safety. You know, just go for the best. And
do you want
offensive line is getting old?
John, do you want Mariota? If he's there, or would you rather trade with Philadelphia and let them have what they want?
You know what? I guess it depends who's available. Yeah, you know what? If I could get Glennon.
Right.
I would probably go that route because I wouldn't want to take another chance on a court unless he's a sure thing, and none of these guys are sure things, you know. And if he turns out to be a great player, good for him. But we're building up a team now, you know. Quality players. Holes. The Jets aren't. You know what they have right now. I don't think they're too far. If they, you know, say they get Revis back, I don't know.
Revis. Come on, he's the complete opposite of Harris.
Byron Maxwell.
I'll take Maxwell if you want to sign him for a reasonable amount. That's fine. They got a lot of money under the cap.
Let's say we get one good corner. You know,
all right, say you get Maxwell.
The other guy's scrapped for the position then.
Right.
You know, so Pryor can play in position.
And that guy McDougal will be coming back, right? McDougal
will get another linebacker that can rush the passer.
Right.
All of a sudden, you're talking about a defense that's going to put a beating on people.
Copels has to wind up being something special, too, eventually. He's another first round.
We're waiting for him to evolve.
Is he a Vernon Golston?
No. Vernon Golston never had a sack. At least Copels
every
had
year.
Like 5 to 8 sacks last year. At least he did something. He's done something.
You know,
he's shown me something.
The problem with drafting is that, you know, sometimes you spend a high draft pick on a guy, so you'll hold a spot for him for 3 or 4 years. They never pan out, and now you lost all that time. You know what I mean? That's what's frustrating.
John, we're going to have a big draft show in April. We're always on the early part of April. We're going to have a big draft. I want you to call up that day. I want you to think about this, and we're going to talk about that. Because I would hold on to that 6 pick until my time comes up. And then if Mariota's there, then I'll find out what the Eagles really want to give up from. That's how I look at that. And then we can go the route of getting another quarterback.
Right.
All right?
We could have – yeah, oh, yeah, definitely. I agree with that.
All right, so the show's running out, and I enjoy talking to you. But
thanks, John. I appreciate the call.
For a length of your time, next call, okay?
All right, guys.
He's got a lot of passion.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks, John. He's got
a lot of his passion. Play
passion for the Jets.
We got another call? Play track 2 during this call, because the show's coming to an end.
I want to talk to you about something.
Come on, baby. All right, who we got on hold now, Brian?
Hey, Derek, it's Gary.
Oh, Gary's on the phone!
Gary!
This is the song that describes our feelings about our teams right now.
Yeah.
Oh, hold on. Gary, you don't say, hey, John. You only say, hey, Gary. It's
Hey, sweetie, listen. I got to just say one thing, because I know you guys are coming off the air in a minute.
Go ahead.
Matt freaking Harvey.
That's right.
You know what?
99.
We didn't have time for baseball, but I got to tell you, I'm so excited to see Matt Harvey pitch this year, Gary.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm glad his first outing was good. He struck out a few guys. It was nice to see, right?
Broke a couple of bats, hit 99 a few times.
Yep.
And the only thing he said, he wished he hit 100.
Yep.
He said, next time.
Just to let you know, you guys have been on the air. What a great game the Chicago Ranger game has been. 125 left in the game, still no score.
Still scoreless, huh?
Gary, that's not what I want to hear. I want to hear Chicago up on that one.
Gary, let me ask you a question, buddy boy.
Yes, sir.
Are you going to be there Tuesday night?
Absolutely.
I want you to enjoy it for what it's worth, because despite that place being a cesspool, a lot of great memories there. And one of the loudest venues you can watch a hockey game.
Hold on. Gary's got some insight. Gary, when is Oposo? Is Oposo coming back soon?
And I'm here in the end of the week.
What about Kennedy? What's going on with him?
Same thing, man. The end of the week.
There you go. The end of the week, so they're going to miss the Ranger game.
Gary, this is as good as I've seen both teams at the same time. I think come April and May, we're going to have to combine our shows and go at it. It's going to be
no doubt about it, buddy.
It's going to be great.
Thanks for calling, Gary.
We got a minute left.
Well, Gary's got some insight. Gary's saying the end of the week, so they're both going to miss
the Kennedy
and Oposo are going to miss the Ranger.
Well, you want him healthy, so I mean, you got to be
for the long run. For the long run, I'll agree with that. That's the way I like it. First place, New York Islanders. Johnny Tavares, first in points. Thank you very much,
folks. I want to thank you for tuning in. It was a big time hockey night, but you know what?
Darren,
the Rangers, the Islanders, and the NHL deserve it because hockey is taking over New York, and we'll be back with you early April. Hopefully,
thanks all the callers.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.